Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, hello, and welcome, or should I say welcome back, to the Indie Football Podcast. It's Monday the 5th of November, and I'm your host for today, Jack Pitbrook. Our editor, Ed Mallion, is unfortunately away in Sri Lanka watching England play cricket. I'm joined today by Chief Football Writer Miguel Delaney.
Morning.
Chief Sports Writer Jonathan Lowe.
Hello.
And today we're going to talk about the Barclays Premier League. All three of us were at Arsenal against Liverpool on Saturday afternoon.
Johnny wasn't.
Oh, he was actually. Oh, yeah. I was.
Oh, yeah.
What were you doing there, Johnny?
I was watching in a purely entertainment capacity and eating in a strictly corporate capacity.
Yeah, not sure I approve.
I'm not sure I approve either. I mean, that
if we were like, if we were American journalists, we would like get really pompous about accepting gifts.
And yeah, I mean, I think if you're writing about the game whilst accepting corporate hospitality, I think that's an ethical line I would not go near. But talking about the game on a podcast, I think that's a slightly more comfortable area.
Did you enjoy it? Was your experience of it different, given that you weren't writing about it?
I was drunk. No, it was a great.
The drinks were on you, in you.
The drinks were in me. Yeah. No, it was. I thought I was really entertained. I think you end up seeing a lot more certainly of the second half than you do when you're trying to frantically write a report for On the Whistle. So you do end up watching a lot more.
Is it weird? I mean, to get very self-indulgent for a second about it, it is actually, I sometimes say I'm sitting in a pub just watching a match and you're kind of just idly watching it. You do kind of, you realise how different you actually watch it when you're not riding on it live. You're going, oh, this sport's quite good, isn't it?
Yeah, you're not kind of deconstructing every single action and move in terms of like what it means for what I want to write or what my report, how does this fit into the thing I'm writing? You just kind of let it wash over you. Sometimes, you know, especially when you're in a pub and I guess there's people around, you don't take it in quite as much because it's a slightly peripheral activity. But when it's there in front of you, I do think there's the experience of watching it in the ground and not writing on it, watching it in the ground and writing on it and watching it on TV are three very, very different experiences.
Mm. I find it very difficult to, like, completely get it out of my head, the idea that even if I go to a game as a fan, which I do occasionally, I find it difficult to like not think, oh wow, if this, you know, I'd have to change my intro now, or I wonder if we're going to get Kevin De Bruyne in the mix zone or whatever. Yeah. Like it's very difficult to take yourself out of that mindset.
Story mode, essentially. What's the story here? What's the line?
Well, when you're watching a game like that, you basically, ultimately, especially if you're writing live, you're always thinking, oh, what's my intro going to be? How am I going to frame this?
Yeah, and I was thinking, no. I wonder who's going to win. Arsenal get a late equaliser. I wonder if they might win this.
That is the thing, isn't it? Basically, you know, people, I think sometimes readers have certain perceptions about. Because one of the things you always hear about bias, who clubs support. Where what I'm actually supporting as a game is the outcome that will allow this line that I like or what I want to lead on.
Like the unity of my piece.
Yeah, basically.
So, you come up with an idea. And then all you want is for that idea to be validated.
Yeah.
And so, for example, on Saturday, this is getting into a kind of very like inside journalism podcast. don't worry, this segment will end soon. But on Saturday, like early in the second half, I started writing. Oh, it's all about Arsenal are good. Like they used to be flaky, but now they're strong.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Least, like basic stuff. And then they conceded, and for like 10 minutes, I was like, "Christ, like I can't write that piece now because they lost 1-0. Like, can I twist it in a way of being like, even though they lost, they are still good?" Mm. And then they scored, and it's like, "Yes, well, my piece is validated."
I kind of half made reference to this in my own piece in the game that I was pretty much writing a piece, not quite hammering Liverpool, but like you know, thinking they're kind of blowing an opportunity here. Then they scored, and I'm praising them here for a calculated, cynical away performance. Well, I don't actually believe they've done that. I think they've got a bit lucky. So in that sense, actually, the Arsenal's goal helped because it allowed me to write what I actually authentically believed. Where had they won, I would have to kind of compromise it a little bit.
Do you, Miguel, do you watch the team that you support, which we won't reveal on air? Do you watch it?
Osasuna.
Do you ever watch it as a fan? As I'm thinking, I want them to win.
I don't really watch football.
Can you really take off? Like, can you really take off your journalism?
Don't really watch. It's changed. The one time I remember it in regards to that is when Robbie Brady scored against Italy in Euro 2016, and it was 86 minutes from the goal. I'd done a big piece. I was really happy with it about Ireland and, you know, falling short and all that. Then they score, great moment, you know, true, all that. Yes, well done. Oh fuck, I've got loads of work to do. Actually, yeah. Kind of care, can I?
It's fine, don't worry.
Okay.
And, I mean, England-Colombia was ours, really, because that was a piece that, as you revealed on the Indy website, you had to rewrite several times, and yet you wouldn't swap that experience.
That was one of the most like emotional, I think, I've been at a game that I've been covering, more so than England-Tunisia and England-Sweden, just because it was so surprising. Mm. Actually, England-Spain was good too, but that wasn't a World Cup, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember like, there were like people embracing in the press box near us, weren't there? After Dier scored that last penalty.
Yeah, yeah. People hugging each other like they were on the bench.
How do we feel about that? I mean, it's kind of hard not to. I mean, I remember when Ireland played France in the Henri game, a lot of journalists visibly punching the air when Ireland scored the first goal in that game, like properly celebrating.
I do get the sort of the whole Columbia J school of thought.
Yeah.
A journalist must be detached from the action and they must not become part of the spectacle emotionally. But how did we get into this job?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly.
Really like football.
Yeah.
What is our gateway into football? Really liking a football team.
Yeah. Also, the idea to write well to a degree and to properly cover that, you've got to be somewhat emotionally invested. It's a balance between retaining a certain kind of cold analysis but also the emotion that actually
how can you write about somebody else's emotions if you're not in tune?
Also, my other nationality, when Spain got beaten by Russia in the World Cup, and I remember being so watching that game, trying to cover it, and being so pissed off with Spain that then it was actually quite empowering then to absolutely hammer them in pieces afterwards.
Yeah, I've often found that City never lose now, but back when City used to lose football matches sometimes,
you're a City fan,
yeah.
Yes. Just for people who don't know that,
I would find something quite gratifying about them losing and being able to hammer them in print, because you kind of have license. If you support a team, you have license to be meaner about them. I'm speaking very honestly. If I'm reporting on United, I sometimes feel a little bit anxious that I'm going to get called out for being biased or whatever. And if they lose, like, I was like, God, can I really say that I thought they were rubbish?
Yeah.
Because people are going, oh, you're only saying that because you hate United. Whereas when City lose, you can go in two-footed and it feels gratifying, in part because also you're like, you guys have ruined my weekend. So now I'm not saying I would ruin their weekend by being criticizing them on the Independent website.
It's a very privileged position to be in fact. The internet, the Independent website is kind of your 606. It's your message board. And I feel the same way about, for example, the England cricket team. When I write about the England cricket team, which I do feel more invested in than any football club.
Yeah.
When they have a shocker, like, it does feel cathartic to absolutely stick the boot in.
Yeah. Also, in relation to that as well, remember the discussion we had when we were in Seville for England-Spain, and we basically had to write about the fans, and we kind of felt that really, of the two of us, I couldn't rewrite it, but you could, because you're English, basically, and an England football fan.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember that conversation. Like, I felt like when I criticise England fans, I have quite a lot of credit to be able to do so, in the sense that I am an English football fan.
Yeah. Because I would have been a bitter Irish person.
Yeah, I go to
wear your Euro 2000 shirt to the, is it Euro 2000?
Yeah, like, I have England shirts. I've been to see the England team as a fan before. I haven't been to see them in a foreign country, admittedly, but like, I don't feel like it's a culture that I'm alien to.
Yeah.
And yet, even when I wrote that piece, I still had like hundreds of people DMing me saying, "You have no right to write that piece, you paedophile." So,
which is only half right.
Yeah, which I guess goes to show that like, ultimately, people will, people are so resistant to being criticised that they will always like say that the person doing the criticism has no right to make that point.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, are we getting into the whole identity politics sort of discussion here where, you know, you can't write about a certain experience unless you're from that particular demographic.
Yeah, or you can't, like, a politician can't represent me unless he is exactly like me, that kind of thing.
I mean,
despite the Spike Lee argument.
Yeah, exactly. We are getting to that that point in football where a fan of a club will not accept a comment on their club unless it's from somebody who's coming from the same place.
Well, you can see it in so much online discussion there, basically, where a lot of the discussion the fans would have, a lot of the criticisms they would have of their own club among themselves, as soon as someone from the outside says that, they get really hostile, or, you know.
But that's a really natural reaction, isn't it? It's like, you know, speaking hypothetically, one can say that one's dad is an arsehole, but if anybody else says tells you your dad's an arsehole, you get defensive.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, Arsenal Liverpool. more, Miguel? What did you think about the performances of the two teams?
A bit disappointed, Liverpool. Even allowing for the fact they are even beyond the fact they didn't win the game, when I think they should have, it was quite a flat performance, and I was surprised by how much they struggled to match Arsenal's intensity, given that they are kind of like poster boys for intensity.
They did kind of. Not subside, but they did flag a little bit, I thought, in the last 20-25 minutes.
It's always hard to get away from basically the feeling that you're ultimately City are going to win this by 15 points again.
It's funny, it's like Liverpool, I think, are performing. They're performing fine. Like, their results, in a world in which City didn't exist, or that City were not the best team in English history, Liverpool would probably win the title.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. And a draw away at Arsenal is a good result.
In the good old days, in the good old days, like a one-all draw away at Arsenal, fine. Like, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
And yet, every time they drop points, all you can think about is, Christ, that's going to be two. It's another 2 points gained for City, effectively.
Yeah, yeah.
The presumption is that City are going to get 100 points.
Well, I mean, again, City, yes, they didn't just win a game. They absolutely battered.
Yeah. I mean, this is the consequence of the league just getting so, so stretched out that there aren't really teams on the same level anymore. There is such an established hierarchy.
There is a lot, with the greatest respect to the lads, absolute rubbish in the Premier League this season.
I don't think so. I just think, like, the best teams are so much better than they were.
What about, I mean,
do you think it sounds like you're saying, Johnny's saying that Miguel is saying that Southampton are rubbish in absolute terms, whereas Johnny, you think Southampton are rubbish only in relative terms.
Yeah, I think Southampton are not that much worse than they were, like, four or five.
What's the record? Everything isn't 7-11 goals at the moment. They're still like their record this season is really poor.
Yeah,
and yet they're still not in the relegation zone.
It's a different league. I think Southampton comfortably beat any of the bottom six from, say, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
I find it difficult to see why the bad teams would be getting worse in absolute terms.
Right, they'd be fitter. They'd be getting much better analysis. They're getting better scouting. The wealth thing is
through them. I mean, like, Newcastle, obviously there's a lack of investment there. Basically, they've got a good manager. Huddersfield, actually, not so much a lack of investment, but they can't invest. They're not big enough. Cardiff, a kind of championship club, basically. Southampton feels, Southampton's squad feels kind of poorly constructed.
I mean, are there any teams to compare to
Crystal Palace? Are quite
good. Sunderland team of the Mick McCarthy Sunderland or that the Derby team from 2008. There's nobody that bad.
We are only on 11. We've only had 11 games, but the points totals of the bottom five suggest that it might be, like, the relegation zone might be made up of teams who are done really badly. Like, 20, there might be a few kind of teams around the 20, 30 point mark.
Yeah, yeah. If it goes on at this rate,
it's a small sample size.
And that's the fact that the league's been stretched out, and you're not going to see that many bottom six teams beating top six teams this season.
It's funny. I was thinking about this earlier. Like, I mean, I'm sure we'll come on to this because we need to talk about City and football leagues. Mm. But like, one of the great myths of the Premier League is that anyone can beat anyone.
Yeah.
And I remember as recently as, like, the start of last season, I remember when Manchester City beat Bournemouth 2-1 with the last-minute Raheem Sterling winner. And in the press conference afterwards, a journalist said to Pep Guardiola something like, but Pep, that's just the unique challenge of the Barclays Premier League, isn't it? Anyone can beat anyone, even though, of course, City had actually beaten Bournemouth. Yeah. But the idea was that, like, in other countries, this would never happen.
Yeah.
And it's a very powerful myth. And of course, it's one which has been, like, buttressed by the fact that Leicester won the Premier League in 2016.
The worst thing that's happened.
Right, because that has, like, Leicester winning the Premier League So I'm going to steal your point from you.
Yeah.
But basically convinced like Soriano and people like him that the Premier League is healthy when it's not.
Well, that's, in so many ways, actually 2015-16 season was basically just this massive outlier. I mean, first of all, I remember at the very start of that season doing a piece at The Independent on this sort of idea that basically the mid-table clubs were suddenly claiming loads more points off the top clubs. Mourinho brought it up, and it was just, of course, before Mourinho had that collapse at Chelsea. But the argument made at the time was basically that this was finally the consequence of the broadcasting money. And you had clubs like Palace who were going to, you know, buying Kabay for 100 grand a week and all, and so it was improving the overall level. But it does seem that in really that was a last hurrah of that model before this, where what's actually happened now is the top six have just streaked away.
Well, that season was a total, it was a total fluke, it does seem kind of almost disingenuous for people to say, wow, this was an amazing total fluke. Doesn't this show, you know, the
you can't say it's a fluke.
Isn't this fluke symptomatic of how competitive the league is?
Like something that has a one in a million chance of happening that happens still had a one in a million chance of happening.
Exactly.
Like, it wasn't inevitable that Leicester were going to win the league just because they did.
And yet now it's not even mid-table or lower in the Premier League teams but Championship teams who are now thinking, well, if we invest a little bit and get into the Premier League, who knows? And it's really kind of it's fueled this.
Yeah. Although maybe in that sense, it does feel like there's a lot of teams who'd be better prepared for the Premier League in the Championship at the moment than some necessarily in the Premier League. A Derby, that was an argument. Leeds. That was an argument that was made about Brighton as well, I suppose.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I mean, the skills that are
Villa.
Getting, the skills that are, well, traditionally, it was thought the skills that would get you out of the Championship, not necessarily the skills that are going to keep you in the Premier League, as I think Neil Warnock is finding at the moment at Cardiff. Yeah. I remember when Swansea went up a few years ago, that they only just scraped into the Premier League in the playoff final because their style of play wasn't necessarily it was a Premier League style of play rather than a sort of Wednesday, Saturday. But they did really well in the Premier League. I think that's less true now. I think the styles are converging slightly.
Mm.
Look at Wolves.
Yeah, Wolves.
Wolves are a really good example of how if you nail a specific way of playing the Championship, there's no reason that you have to kind of start again.
Or Leeds now.
Yeah. And when in fact, Cardiff are in fact the kind of very much the old model, and that's maybe why they're doing so badly, is because they've kind of retained this like Championship specific style of play. On to City. I mean, this is, Miguel, I saw you getting involved with this on Twitter yesterday. I mean, look, it looks pretty obvious that City are going to win the league. They're going to get close to 100 points, I think.
Yeah.
Are we now at the point where we think this is a bad thing for English football?
I suppose the immediate response you get is, well, this wasn't certainly, look, I'm entitled to United 1. But ultimately, the source of this is different. I mean, basically, football has never been so financially polarised, not even the last 10 years, than it is now. I mean, to a degree, what's happened with City is, I mean, the fact that the money has allowed them to buy the best coach in the world, Guardiola. When he leaves, I think there'll be a drop down. But still, they're so well, the money has allowed them to be so well set up and everything. And what I don't think it'll be obvious, I think because there's too much money in the other clubs for it to be a kind of a Germany situation or France situation or an Italy situation. This just feeds into this wider discussion we're having about the lack of competitive vibrancy to the league. So it's not so much the City win it that's the problem. It's just that what that represents.
From Guardiola's point of view, I think it's more... It's more akin to, I mean, we're kind of giving him the title already, which seems fair.
I'd put a good sum of money in them.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think it's more akin to what he has done, he did at Bayern Munich than what he did at Barcelona.
Yeah.
When obviously they had a financial advantage, but there was, I think they gave us something above and beyond that.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, aesthetically, in terms of the way they moved the game forward, as impressed as I am by this City side, and they are a brilliant team, they don't make me feel the same way that Barcelona team did. They make me feel like the Bayern Munich team did. Oh, that's that's very good football, lads. Very good.
Does this mean, should the moralist in football want City to ultimately fail in the Champions League then? It's a bit like if you...
It's funny, isn't it? Like, the fact that the Champions League is so random, and the fact that it's so difficult to, the fact that the best team doesn't always win it, like, that has become, that basically has made the Champions League into this, it's quite alluring, right?
Yeah.
Because it's so, even though Real Madrid have just won it 3 years
in a
row.
Cup of Europe.
Nevertheless, it feels kind of unviable.
Yeah. It just takes a while to get to that point, which is one of the problems. The competition really explodes in the last 16, and particularly the quarterfinals. There's just this long preamble, but even
last season and probably the season before, you know, you're going to end up with Real Madrid and Bayern Munich at some point, and you know, Liverpool were a real breath of fresh air, and Roma were a real breath of fresh air last season. But a lot of the storylines kept on reiterating themselves all the way through the knockout stages, right up to Real Madrid winning.
I mean, like, the reason why City should be confident is that the rich teams always win in the end. Like, Atletico Madrid have reached two finals and lost them both. If you want an example for how economically polarized the Champions League is, Juventus now look like the kind of like underdogs.
And
yet they've reached two finals and lost them both. And that's why you think it's kind of inevitable that one day City will win it. But it does kind of make... We were talking about this in the pub on Saturday evening after the game. And what I think... The problem with City's wealth is that they are so good at spending it.
Yeah.
Like, that's what nobody expected. Nobody expected them to be this smart and this ruthless and this effective. Like, if they weren't smart, then
they would have been buying Robinhos.
They would have been Chelsea. They would have been buying Robinhos.
No one has done it this well in football before.
Yeah, and that's...
The money combined with the expertise.
Exactly. And that's basically why it's so damaging.
Yeah.
Is because they're so good. Like, if they weren't good, football could have survived.
Well, there's no more telling quote basically than that kind of almost flipping quote in the Football League. It's basically the one accredited to Caldu and about, well, we'll just pay 30 million for the 50 best lawyers. that's basically their attitude to everything, essentially. When they properly got serious after the initial first few years of the takeover, what did they do? They basically went to what, like, an agent described to me as the Facebook of football. They went to Barcelona, employed their better, brought in their best brains, brought over wholesale, and that's what they've done right through the club.
It reminds me of it, like a joke, a very flippant joke I made after Spurs sold Bale to Madrid for 80 million or whatever it was, and kind of squandered the money. And I said something like, why don't Spurs just buy the 80 best 15-year-olds in the world for like £1 million each? One of them will be the new Bale.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what City are trying to do.
Well, actually, it's funny, because just for a search last night, I was actually reading that Giles Tremlett piece that he did on Soriano in December with The Guardian.
It's a really good article.
Sorry?
It's a really interesting
article. Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, but one of the points made in it is about, you know, City actually trying to do, they're trying to create a La Masia. And the example is raised about how that's a system that in the last decade or last two decades has produced Messi, Iniesta, Pique, Puyol, Guardiola himself, obviously, before. But I think it was the combined fee necessary for all of those was 2 million. If you were to sell them, what would the price be?
Yeah. But the thing is, what separates them apart now is that they have six La Masias in different continents all over the world. Yeah. They've got Girona, they've got Melbourne, they've got New York, and what they're creating is something that is not just transnational but supranational. That it's beyond the power of any single organization to oversee it.
And on that, actually, because it was something brought up in the Tremolo piece, well, this whole idea of glocalization of a kind of but how much does this actually have to do with Man City? I mean, Man City, Man City, as we have known them, are essentially just a host vessel for this kind of extremely modern football idea. It's almost a kind of a grand, but very successful experiment.
Yeah, yeah, completely. It is a grand and successful experiment, but it's the scale of which is so much bigger than anybody expected at the time. Like nobody wants, like 10 years ago, nobody had any idea that this was people. You know, nobody had any idea that this is where it's going to head up.
Yeah,
I remember one capitalism.
I remember a friend of mine telling me that someone said it's going to be just like Betis. So you're going to sign in Danielson and but never win the league. And
yeah.
And I can see why somebody might have said that in 2008. But yeah, it's remarkable where this has ended up.
They very much escaped City-itis. You know, it's unbelievable. Right? It's the complete opposite.
It's a really interesting debate, and one that you can't really have on Twitter because you get shouted at.
Yeah.
Like, to what extent is this, in any recognisable sense, Manchester City?
Yeah.
I kind of used to be of the view, I mean, speaking, you know, I've already admitted on this podcast I'm a City fan, so I might as well say it again now. Like, I used to be of the view that this was like a kind of continuation. Obviously, like, City were much better, but it was still the same club and the same fans and the same colours and the same badge. And, you know, they'd get Tony Book and Colin Bell and Mike Summerby along at games. And it was kind of like the same, basically. Yeah. And I kind of don't really feel that anymore. And I admit that I never go to City. I mean, I go to like one City game as a fan a year anymore. Mm. But I don't. I just think it's so different that you can't pretend it is the same thing.
City are essentially a host body, aren't they?
Yeah.
And
well, that is exactly the phrase used by that lawyer that works with them in that Tremolo piece as well. Right. Edelman.
And once your footballing and financial clout rises to that level, you then have the political clout to be able to distort the market.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the same as, you know, United did in the 90s and 2000s. You can actually bend the rules of the market to your advantage.
That's the most like telling thing from what's come out this weekend is the way that, and we kind of knew this, but it's interesting to actually have it in writing, the way that City kind of rode roughshod over FFP.
Well, and also, given the complaint for so long was that City were outsiders, and like one of the arguments even right up to this week City fans are making is that, oh, the old cabal, the boys, they're resistant to us outsiders coming in, little City. No, sorry, you're actually now front and centre of the cabal, and you're very much accepted into it.
Yeah, like, this has been written about quite a lot regarding Soriano in the Premier League. Like, Soriano is the kind of, arguably the most influential man in the Premier League now.
Yeah. Interesting that Spurs weren't. I wonder what Daniel Levy thinks about that. Mm. Spurs weren't invited into this Super League document.
Let's wrap up in the next sort of 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean,
Johnny, go on.
Well, you know, I was just going to say, like, we maybe this is all getting a little bit dark and deep and a bit of a downer, but we, like, people go to sport because you know, of this illusion of, you know, two teams, you know, on a level playing field, and unfortunately, sport, while never having been really a level playing field, is becoming even less of a level playing field. It's only getting worse, and people are far too absorbed with things like fucking poppies to notice it.
I think football is reaching a point of no return. And I think,
in what sense?
In terms of how it's century old structures are gonna gradually breaking apart.
Yeah.
I think it will come to the point where there's some super NFL style competition that's basically just Super League. And
as in Europe's best teams playing around the world, and not playing in their domestic leagues.
Probably, yeah, I'd say so. It feels like that. I mean, but it feels that's the way it's going, because we've heard this argument for the last 30 years. Yeah. It's that the finance have now brought it to the point where it's not just that they want it; that's arguably logically desirable, because it's so impossible for any other club
I think that's fair enough. I mean, obviously, whatever you think about it morally, like. It's clear that Manchester City and Manchester United have more in common with Barcelona than they do with Burnley.
There's a bit of a tragedy there in a sense, because if you think about it, I kind of wanted to write this piece at the World Cup, but we had too much to do, basically. But for so long, football, through almost sheer luck, was almost a perfectly balanced sport in absolutely every sense, right down to the fact that it became the world's universal sport because it's the easiest to play, bar, say, running. Essentially, you just pick something that resembles a football, mm-hmm. and any kid can do it. Can do it on their own, against the wall. The sport, even if you look at the rules of the sport, the competitive balance of it was basically so. Even I think the fact that where they put the penalty spot, that gives the kicker a 70% chance of scoring. Even again, that wasn't by design.
What do you mean where they put the penalty spot?
So the fact that it's 12 yards from the goal, it gives the kicker a 70% chance of scoring. That wasn't by design, but again, it reflects the appropriate reward for the decision. But and of course, you had a situation where no matter how much money you had, or no, in the past, the game was still low scoring enough, just for the pure maths, that you know, a small team could just dig in and get a result. Whereas all of that is gradually being eroded, right down to the fact that even this issue of the universality of sport, where we could have this elite team, this elite group cut off from the rest. And that does have potential repercussions for, I suppose, how clubs are funded, the pyramid in every country, whether clubs can survive, and I suppose whether even to go, I suppose, really into the future and kind of far-reaching this, you know, where people can play on an organised basis,
and the appeal of the sport,
yeah, and the appeal of the sport as well, yeah,
because yeah. You know, if you're a fan of Burnley or Blackburn, yeah. Or Bournemouth or Bromley or whatever, where is your place in this new yeah. world?
Right, yeah. I think we all like the idea that we are, whoever, you know, you are only X number of promotions away from being at the top, and that even a player like we all, so Jamie Vardy or whoever, you know, playing non-league, mm-hmm. but it's kind of reachable. The idea that this would be kind of the top would be creamed off and lifted away,
yeah,
is like obviously quite unattractive and scary, I think, for lots of football fans and players in the UK.
Yeah, I don't actually know enough about NFL in terms of that. What are the pathways there? Is that all college? Is it?
Well, as in for the players,
yeah,
they generally get drafted into NFL. It's a shame we don't have our NFL expert here, but yeah, they get drafted into NFL having played college football.
Yeah, so they'll get they'll go to college mostly on scholarships. Mm. You know, the college have huge amounts of money to you know, fund scholarships for talented players, and then the mm. most talented college players will go into the draft and they'll be drafted by yeah. NFL.
I mean, I presume that like a European Super League would still get players in because it would need them. Like, yeah, they would still scout and buy players, but it would just be,
you'd have feeder teams,
right? Oh yeah, of course, because that would be amazing, wouldn't it? If Manchester City were to play in the Super League. And we're also to own a Premier League team.
Yeah. Or, you know, they'd buy somebody like Ajax,
yeah.
and say, like, okay, well, you know, we'll pay you a little bit and, you know, just keep supplying us with Davinson Sanchez's.
It is, yeah. But basically, football has gone the way of the rest of the world. That no one said stop soon enough. So, yeah. And with the certain structures that are basically built, so this sort of situation is an inevitability.
Stop.
Yeah.
Stop.
That's actually a perfect way to end the podcast. thank you very much for listening. And
that was bleak.
So this week, Johnny. Let's get back to some actual football. Johnny McGill, you are off to Turin tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, never been to Turin. Never been to Juve, so looking forward to
it's
that.
It's a great ground. It's a really great mm-hmm. ground.
Yeah. Although not the easiest to get away from late at night.
Really? Uber. No. I mean, I would say I use Uber. Is that bad?
Not a huge thing out there.
I don't think there is Uber in Turin. And then I'm going to Tottenham against PSV Eindhoven.
Yep. And must-win game for the Lily Whites.
It is a must-win game for the Lily Whites. And then next weekend, Manchester Derby?
Yeah. Manchester Derby.
You going to that?
Is it that this weekend?
That's Sunday,
That's
yeah.
Sunday, yeah.
Yeah, I'm in North Wales.
Hey, I'm on a 12:17 train.
You should do that.
It's
that city that you'd never...
Yeah, you should do that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you do that.
Okay.
What's it? Yeah.
I'm actually going on Sunday supplement.
Oh, great. But you can still do that, though.
Yeah. I've done it before for that match thing.
Which train are you getting?
12:17.
12:17. Yeah, I could be at Euston for midday.
I've gone from supplement to Anfield for 4 p.m. So it's not a problem.
Okay, cool. At the Independent Football Podcast, we like to let you in on how we make decisions about who does what. This is kind of an Easter egg for those of you who are still listening 45 yeah. minutes in. Thank you very much indeed for joining us, and look forward to joining you again next Monday. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.